The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Chuck, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. How you doing today, brother?
Hey, brother TD. I am doing fantabulous. I've got grandkids running around the swimming pool, and I got business coming in from all parts of the country. And we're just having a great old time, but live and well, sir.
Well, that is great. I wanted to have you back on. I know we've been playing, we've been playing phone tag on this. And when this interview first came out, Sean Ryan had Dr. Ben Carson on, and they were talking about healthcare and solutions. And when I listened, when I immediately listened to this, that's when I shared it with you. And as I was listening to this concept to fix the healthcare crisis, I'm like, this is basically what we are doing on a family level and on a more interpersonal Christian level. And that's why I said, hey, you need to listen to this. It's about 10 or 15 minutes, because this really is what private family banking is all about. I'll link the video to the interview with Dr. Ben Carson, but basically the concept of how to fix the healthcare system is he was asked a question from one of Sean's subscribers, and I have the transcript here, so I'm just going to read just a little bit of this because
Pulling that up, I worked over 20 years in healthcare as a consultant to hospitals and healthcare providers around the country. So I know the healthcare system is so broken, not only in the delivery side, but the payment side. And I listened to that interview excerpt with Ben Carson, Dr. Carson, and he nails it. I mean, the whole idea of turning this thing around, you know, we may have a chance of doing it with RFK there. And turn some of these health HSA health savings accounts. But yeah, private family banking emulates that. We'll go into great detail, but go ahead with your transcript.
Okay, so Carson says, well, everybody knows cost of medical care is skyrocketing. It's much greater in this country than it is anywhere else in the world. And yet we don't have the best outcomes. We don't have the best longevity. So it makes you question the efficiency of our system. We spent $13,100 per capita per year in this country on healthcare. Concierge practices, just to put that in perspective, cost generally $5,000 to $10,000. So it is really a problem. What do you need for good healthcare? A patient and a healthcare provider. That's all you need. Along came the middleman to facilitate the relationship, and now the middleman is the major entity controlling both of the other two. That's where all the money's going. So what we need to do is have a system that takes us back to the healthcare provider and the patient. And we already actually had that. It's called health savings account. If you have it, you just modify that instance. If a husband is having a procedure or something done and he's short $500, his wife can give it to him out of hers, or his brother or his cousin or his uncle or his aunt. And that way, every family becomes their own insurance company, interestingly enough. And you also modify it so that when a person dies, their health savings account can be given to one of their family members. And so I'm listening to this explanation to how to solve this problem. And I'm like, this is exactly what we're doing to create family wealth through private family banking. So this concept obviously isn't new. Many people are using it, and you can apply this concept to other problems and resolve other monetary issues. But I just found that fascinating, and I thought we could kind of delve into that.
That's great. That would lead in. So, yeah. So whenever you involve the government and as the middleman, I mean, look at what they're uncovering with Doge and what Trump and Musk and these guys. I mean, I don't know if they'll make it all the way through this, but they're doing a great early job trying to get things done. But, you know, the powers that be will be weighing in over the months ahead. But they're certainly making a dent, because when you put the government, and I can speak a little bit more freely now, and that I'm not consulting anymore, but I can tell you my clients, that were healthcare providers, mostly hospitals, it's funny money. I mean, if you go to a hospital, call me up, I'll give you a free consultation on how to negotiate a $150,000 bill down to $5,000, because it's all bloated because the government's involved. It's a mess. It's a total, absolute debacle. There's no truth in it. There's no actual, they have no idea what the actual costs are. So what Carson's getting at is when he says concierge, he means doctor to patient. You provide services to me as a healthcare provider, and I pay you cash money. End of deal. Get rid of the middleman. I think it's a wonderful idea. And what he's alluding to is you can do that today. It used to be for only rich people, but if you look at the cost per capita he's talking about, that he's saying the concierge service is less. You know, so you can find doctors in different metropolitan areas that are cash only. They don't take any insurance. I don't know if they have to take Medicare or not. I'm not sure. I don't use Medicare. I'm self-insured through other means. But, you know, the bottom line is we got to get government out of healthcare because they not only messed it up from a cost and payment standpoint, but they messed it up from a quality standpoint. And they put all these regulations and burdensome stuff in. And hospitals are notoriously working on a 1% to 2% margin at best. And they turn over the executive staff all the time thinking somebody's going to do better. But it's a broken system.
Yeah, and the other thing we have to get government out of is we have to get government out of the banking system. And when I say that, you know, that sounds like counterintuitive. Well, regulations and what about the mob and all that stuff. But I mean, really, when you think about it, the reason that there's hyperinflation is because of the Federal Reserve. Supposedly, according to the talking points, you know, the Federal Reserve was designed to stifle and stop inflation, when in fact, everything that they're doing is creating all this hyperinflation. And so if you can eliminate the government, even though the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor is it a reserve, but our government did create it and does allow it to exist and persist. And so by taking control of your own finances, by capitalizing, and then by working together as a family to capitalize, you can create your own system where you can sidestep the current modern concept of what banking is and create your own banking system and, you know, finance, perform that banking function in your life, finance what you need to finance. Currently, right now, my son is building his house next door, and I am presently financing that. He's 20 years old. He doesn't have a really high credit score. He would never qualify for a $150,000 mortgage. They have a new business, you know, that's doing very well, but he certainly wouldn't qualify for a loan. But by implementing the private family banking practice and putting it to work and applying the concepts is allowing us to do this without the use of a conventional bank.
Yeah. You know, I just finished filming a 6-module course that I'll let you offer to your listeners at no charge by me. If you want to charge for it, that's yours. But it's going to be biblical based. It is going to be, I went to a studio and worked for 3 days straight. And one of the things I address is this very thing of what's wrong with the Federal Reserve. There's no federal about it, and there's no reserves. And all they do is print more money and cause inflation. So, you know, the idea of understanding what the manufacturing cost is of something is held in this whole context of an inflated, bloated fiat money. And so, the government shouldn't be in that at all. That's the big picture. The economy across the country, no matter if you're in the healthcare industry or manufacturing or whatever. So absolutely. So private family banking, of course, I'm a big advocate. I'm a representative for private family banking. You can go to, you'll put it in the notes, I'm sure, but it's privatefamilybanking.com. You can search on my name there. And we help couples, whether you be in your 20s, some of the people that you know, and whether you're in your 30s or 40s and you've got some cash accumulated, we can move that out of the banking system and create a privatized banking system where you can work with your family. Now, not every dad gets this vision, but dad, grandpa, whatever, you can help your kids and you can help them establish their own privatized banking. So you get a network of these privatized banks. And, you know, we've also worked together to help other individuals. You know, I know that we've helped some guys that had some business transactions that, You know, they couldn't, as you mentioned, you can't go to a bank, but if somebody and get approved, but if somebody can listen to your story and take your credible confession, if you will, of your faith and your honesty, and deal with you privately and get all the noise out of the system, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you know, not only was I able to, by networking with you, not only was I able to finance my son's home purchase, but you introduced me to a couple people, and I was able to do some private lending that was incredibly lucrative. And, you know, everything has risks, and you weigh the risks, right, and you get all the information, but then you act accordingly. And, you know, normally when people think about interest and different things, they never think about getting paid interest and helping people make loans. They always think about paying interest. And that's kind of where you're on the wrong end of the stick. If you can earn interest and be paid interest, that's when you're in control of your banking function and you're not paying interest to an outside, an unfaced, unnamed source.
That's right. And kind of backing up to the conversation with Sean Ryan and Carson, if you understand what they're talking about there, they're talking about a huge, enormous amount of money flow. And whenever you put a third party entity, they're getting a commission of sorts. That means they're handling that money and they have to pay all these people to this infrastructure. And it's the same in the banking system. So at Private Family Banking, I like to pose the concept like this. If you back up, the big idea is, imagine if you could earn money on all the money that's going to flow through your life. This is no new money. This is not creating new money or trying to do beans and rice and all this craziness. This is just the money you're going to earn over a lifetime and move it out of that banking system into your own banking system, where you're going to earn uninterrupted compounding interest, tax deferred, ultimately tax free. That's Private Family Banking. That's the model. It's powerful because people don't realize over your lifetime, you may make $2, $3, $4, $10 million. And if you can make money on $10 million as opposed to giving it to the bank who's lending your money out at fractional reserve banking, another artifact of the Federal Reserve and our broken fiat money system, and they're making money on that. They loan it out 9 times. And do you know, in COVID, they removed the reserve requirements from the mainstream banks. So, you know, there's no money there. If we have, the FDIC is broke, that's a joke. Broke is a joke, right? And so if we have a bank run, even a mini bank run, like we had a couple of years back with that bank in California, it's not going to be a good day for a lot of people. So with who we use people that have been in business for over 100 years. They've paid a dividend every year consecutively since the early 1900s. Imagine that in today's world, always making a profit. And that's what you do with Private Family Banking. Your family will prosper outside of the banking system, outside of the taxation system, and you can bring it in-house and leave a legacy wealth, tax-free legacy wealth with our system.
Yeah, another interesting thing, I was just listening today to Tucker Carlson, had a favorite of mine, Catherine Austin Fitz from the Solari Report. And if you go over to Solari.com, you can see her work there. For those of you that don't know, Catherine Austin Fitz was a whistleblower under Obama. She worked, I think it was the Ways and Means Committee, and she found like missing trillions of dollars through HUD, Housing and Urban Development. And so that's been kind of like her forte in the financial field. And she has been advocating for local economy, local community, local banking, and just developing your own parallel economy within your local community. And that, of course, involves using a local bank and that you understand and all these different things. But what was very interesting to me is more and more people are talking about this, about stop outsourcing everything. This is what I warn people. I got out of the market in 2008, and we've seen a lot in the last 4 or 5 years, all of these different people exposing, guys like Robbie Starbuck, right? And they explain how BlackRock, Blackstone, State Street, and Vanguard monolithically own everything. And they have been able to accomplish that feat spot because of the creation of the 401k, and that forced us from a retirement standpoint, from a savings standpoint, from defined benefit to defined contribution. And by making that 52 fake out, it forced everybody, your average saver, your average capitalist that wanted to capitalize, it forced their money from whatever type of fixed conservative savings, it forced them into the market so they could get their 8 to 12% rate of return so that they can compete with the inflation that the Federal Reserve is creating. Now, the other thing that that did is that completely capitalized BlackRock, Blackstone, State Street, and Vanguard to take all of your money that you thought that you were investing for a rainy day, and they have been able to capitalize that and then use derivatives to 1,000 or maybe even a trillion exit and buy up every conceivable company that there is on the exchange and hold a top five position on their board of directors. And now, and simultaneously buy like 50 to 80% of the residential real estate and right, drive up the cost of home ownership to astronomical amounts. And that entire weaponized system that has been turned against us is funded by the people that invest in Wall Street.
Yeah. And, you know, the 401k is just a ticking time bomb. I mean, they're going to come after that money for taxes. People think their tax rate's going to go down. Good luck with that. I vacated my 401ks over a period of years way back. And, you know, I think people who have all of their assets in their home and no liquidity and all their assets in a 401k, where, you know, you can borrow against those at a limited amount. We have a way to shift about 50K out of those 401ks into a banking, privatized banking system with a 401k loan. And then that person can either decide to pay the 401k back in a lump sum through the policy or through what we set up in the family banking system, or they can let it ride and take a payroll reduction. But the tax man cometh. They're going to get, I mean, all of that billions, trillions of dollars in 401k. Don't you think that's going to be a target later to pay for all this overhead? Because, you know, the birth rate plays into this. We didn't replace our population. I mean, Japan is in a horrible shape. No wonder they're importing people. Part of this is our own fault. You know, abortion has wiped out all the children that would have been there. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And the idea of a one or two child family, not a great idea to replenish an economy. So, you know, you're going to work longer. You know, I'm in my 70s now. I'm still working because I want to work, but and I help people and I enjoy doing that. But the reality is, if you're going to have a decent lifestyle moving forward, you better get ready, because there's retirement's kind of a mythical, nonsensical kind of thing anyway. And as a Christian, that's not in my lexicon. But, you know, I think we have to be careful what we've been taught. You're indicating the 401k, it's a trap. And they got me, exactly. It was a setup to suck in all this money from the working guy and the sort of middle executive, thinking, well, we're going to defer these taxes and we're going to do this and then you're going to match. And it's so enticing. And I think if you're getting a match, a healthy match, take it, but then take that money and run, get it out of there. And we can help do that. There's mechanisms to do that without paying penalties and income tax, but you have to do it a bit at a time. But same with IRAs and Roths and all this nonsense, but it's market exposure. Who doesn't know? I mean, I was recently speaking at a conference, and the day I went was that Thursday, Friday, where the Dow dropped, you know, what it was, I think 2,800 points in 2 days or whatever. People were like freaking out. Like one guy said, I lost 70 grand in 2 days. That's not good. If you're in your 60s and you lose $70,000, good luck getting that back.
Well, and the other thing, you know, the investors and the Dave Ramseys of the world, you know, well, you didn't lose anything because you didn't sell. Well, yeah, that's a very large assumption that you're making. What if you had to, you know, what if you're in retirement and you have to take a distribution, or what if you're required to take a required minimum distribution, you know, all these things that glitter clearly aren't gold because you're forced to conform to all these rules and regulations. You can't access your money when you need it. You can access your money when they let you. You are being held hostage by definition. You know, your money's being held hostage, and it's for the carrot of this tax-deferred unicorn thing. But even under the Obama with the MIRA, they've already indicated that they are going to abscond these retirement accounts. And when they need the money or they need to reset the system, you know, they're going to take the money. If they if they want the money, they're going to take the money. And so it would be foolish to not have the foresight to see what's going to happen and to plan accordingly. Okay. Now, ultimately, if they really wanted to, they can absolutely do whatever they want, for lack of a better term. But to, if you foresee the evil and you just like blindly
roll over,
don't care or roll over, I mean, that's just foolish and stupid. And we have plenty of historical accounts where people have paid attention and they've seen the trends and they've acted accordingly and they've been abundantly blessed because of it. I mean, God gives us discernment, God gives us wisdom, God gives us counselors for a reason, not to just ignore everything they're saying, but to pay attention. And the other thing that'll happen is kind of, you have to rethink your thinking, but once you hear things, you'll start to connect the dots and you'll be like, wait a minute. Because, you know, I was told to go to school to get a good education so I could get a good job, so that I could get a good 401k, so I could retire when I'm 65, you know. And, you know, when I was in high school, you know, the big thing was IBM, you know, and IBM at that time was the premier employer. And, you know, I grew up in a government school system in the Prussian model, where the whole entire concept is you go to school so you can become a good worker bee, so you can work for the monolithic mega corporation, and you can clock in, clock out, do your 9 to 5, and you'll get this pension. Well, what happened while I was in high school is, this is when they went from defined benefit, then when they went from pensions to 401ks. And what's really interesting and fascinating now, if I've had Barry Dyke on a couple times, but he's explaining right now how these larger employers, to attract employees, they're going back to defined benefit packages, right?
Because
they work, because they're incredibly lucrative, because they're very attractive, and because people are sick and tired of the Wall Street dog and pony show. And there's very little leverage, and you don't get all the options that you should have with your money. It's your money. It's your savings.
Right. Yeah. Barry's great. And Barry hit the nail on the head there. We do defined benefit pension plans too, for closely held LLCs, a family-based type business, where they can prepare the sons and daughters to take the business over, and the owner founder gets a pension. So those things are out there for the smaller guys, and we do work on those. It's a 412(e)(3) program. It is a government recognized program, but hey, you got to take advantage of what you got to take advantage. But you can put away quite a bit of money in one of those and exit your business and hand it over to your family or a buyer. If you have a buyer that's undercapitalized and can't buy the business, you can help them by doing that. But yeah, Barry's got it right. Barry's got some great insights on Wall Street, obviously, you know, and you've interviewed him. He's a great guy.
Yeah. So I was thinking, I didn't know if there was anything else that you wanted to cover or any other aspects that you wanted to talk about or discuss, as far as when it comes to the current financial condition. Because, I mean, it's real interesting, because depending on who you listen to, the impacts of the tariffs, or whether or not there's anything in these shipping containers they're at or at the ports. And, you know, there's a large group of people that are claiming that a massive downturn is coming. And then there's more optimistic people. And the thing that kind of concerns me the most, it's just from statistical probability standpoint, you know, I used to be a financial planner for 11 years and did all that stuff. And so I was, you know, I studied all that stuff and I used to trade on charts and candlesticks and all these different things. And you could trade on charts because historically stocks would perform a certain way. And so you could trade on volume and you could buy calls and shorts and puts and all these different things. And so there was all these different strategies and there was very expensive software. But what happened was in 2008 when they abandoned, when George Bush said, we need to abandon free market principles to save the free market. You know, what we did with the TARP, you know, the TARP that they covers the dead bodies with, you know, with the TARP, we destroyed what was left of any type of fiscal, remotely fiscal conservative policy when it comes to our monetary apparatus. And so therefore, these historical trends were no longer relevant. So prior to this last correction, right now, I say all that to say this, right now, we are in a, even with this little recent correction, we are still in a bull market. And I think this is since 08, what's that, like 16, 17 year run here? Yeah. And prior to 08, our longest bull run, I think, was 8 years, maybe nine, eight and a half, somewhere like that.
Yeah, so we're way overdue for a correction. Yeah.
We're way overdue for a correction. And we've seen people in the last 4 years, and wisely so, transferring their money out and buying real assets, buying real infrastructure, buying heavy equipment, doing all these things. You know, one of the greatest investments you can make is in a business. You know, your greatest ability is your ability to earn income. And that's the whole entire philosophy and concept of private family banking, is you need to protect your ability to earn income. And then if there's a vehicle where you can take your ability to earn income and take all of that income and run it through a vehicle, right? I mean, we're taught to think very short term, and how much money, how much discretionary income do you have, you know? And that might be 10% of what you annually earn. But what if you think about is, well, how much do I annually earn? And what if there was a way to capture every dollar I earned, right? And now, if you're making six figures, if you're making $100,000 a year, now you have the ability to capture $1 million in 10 years. That's very powerful.
It is.
That's a very powerful idea.
And if you can earn even on some of that money on uninterrupted compounding of the interest, you know, Albert Einstein said that compound interest was similar to the eighth wonder of the world, because, you know, either it'll use you or you can use it. So people need to learn the power of that. And it doesn't matter if it's $10,000 or $100,000 or $1 million, the principles all work the same. You got to get started, though. And that's what I urge people to do. So I do meet couples. And so we also work with the ultra wealthy, high net worth people, ultra high net worth people in a different way, where we're running quite a bit of money through some other things that we do. But for the guys that are like me, came up and maybe I was a middle executive and made a pretty good salary, all the way down to anybody who's got a small business or working an hourly job, even, you can still use these principles that we not only teach you, but show you how to use and help you implement in private family banking. They're very powerful.
Yeah. So I'll link all of Chuck's information down below, and obviously feel free to reach out to him. Chuck is an awesome brother, and I can vouch for him. We've been working together now for almost a couple years, very successfully, and I greatly appreciate his mentorship and friendship. And I want to encourage you all, if you do have any questions or if you've been thinking about it, I get asked all the time, like, what should I do with my 401k? What should I do with my IRA or Roth IRA? And Chuck is a great resource to ask about that and to start thinking, rethinking your thinking. Think long term, think legacy, and then you have to act. You know, you have to act. It's so many people, whether it's, you know, you want to relocate to somewhere else in the country, or you want to live, you know, rurally. Currently you live in the city and you want to live rurally, or you know you need to make a change. Maybe it's in your diet, maybe it's in your finance or whatever. But And what's so fascinating with in the Christian life and discipline is so many of these things are interrelated, whether it's your diet. And I was listening today to an interview Sean Baker did with a strength and conditioning coach, and he was just talking about the compounding effect, right, of these little decisions that you make to train and to eat properly. And it's the exact same thing in your financial portfolio is when you make these minor adjustments and these small changes, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. Like when you start doing crunches, right, you're not going to do 100 crunches. You're going to do one, then you're going to go do 10, two, then you might do 10. And how do you get to 100? Well, it took some time, right? But now you're doing 100 effortlessly. And it's the same thing with your financial acumen and your financial fortitude is you accumulate it over time. This isn't any kind of stupid get rich quick scheme or anything like that. Money doesn't work like that. Discipleship doesn't work like that. Discernment doesn't work like that, you know? And so, but I do want to encourage you to take action, you know, whether that's getting information or whether that's actually putting your foot to your own butt and making something happen. But, you know, today's the day. You're not getting any younger. And so I encourage y'all to take action. Chuck, in closing, is there anything you want to leave us with?
I'd say if you want to get in touch with me, it's chuck@privatefamilybanking.com. I'm sure TD will put that in the notes. And I'm glad to, when my coursework gets published here in a few weeks, I'll give you free access to that, as well as they can make it a Fearless Podcast a special. And you're going to enjoy it. It's six modules filmed with audio and a whole biblical basis for finances, how to think about money, economics. I do a little bit of Austrian economics teaching, talking about stewardship and what that means and how we're charged for a dominion mandate to work in the world when we're alive. And it's just not about ethereal eternity, although I'm very glad I'm going to heaven, but you know, we're not Gnostics. We're not living just all, and it's everything's way up here, right? We got to do it in the here and now. And private family banking is just the block and tackle stuff. It's so creative what you can do with this. And I've got so many other projects going on, and we're really excited about it. So just get a hold of me, chuck@privatefamilybanking.com, and we'll get together and find out where you're at. Let's get a baseline. There is no magic. There isn't any get rich quick, but we can certainly take you from where you are and let's put you in a different trajectory.
All right, Chuck. Thanks, y'all, for watching. This is a value for value proposition. So if you enjoy our information, go on over to thetexasboys.com. If you are local in the Northeast Texas area, we do have half a beef. So if you're looking for a cow, hit us up over at the Texas Boys at the Meat Co. or send us an email at countrytexasboys.com. Chuck, I forgot to ask you. I know that you drink coffee.
Yeah.
And every guest on the Fearless Podcast gets a free bag of coffee. We just revamped our coffee line, locally roasted, organic. We have light, medium, dark roast, and then we have a white roast. Have you ever heard of a white roast coffee?
No.
So white roast coffee is first crack coffee. It's a very light ground. It is absolutely delicious. It's my favorite. And if you had to pick, what would you pick, Chuck?
I'll try the light. I'll take the white roast. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Okay, that's firecracker, and I'll send you a bag of firecracker. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you on the next one.
All right.